Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I had to let it ride sometimes, baby. The best intro is Sports Talk Radio. You know who it is. Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time tonight. Number to call the show, 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we'll be joined by our pal Kevin Sheehan, the host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, the Team 980. We'll get his thoughts on the big breaking news of the day, Brandon Ayuk officially requesting a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. We'll touch more on the Brandon Ayuk stuff as we continue our Commanders position preview series. Part two of that coming up here momentarily as we'll talk all things defensive backs and wide receivers as the Commanders get geared up for training camp. Right now, though, Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Get ready to start. Nats, 2 representatives out in Texas. C.J. Abrams. Kyle Finnegan getting the late call up, who's been one of the best closers in Major League Baseball. Abrams has hit the ball really well and is having a damn good season for the Washington Nationals. Our own Grant Paulson out there doing some coverage of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I wanted to talk about this real quick relative to every All-Star Game that exists. With Major League Baseball determining home field advantage in the World Series off of this game, I think it raises the importance level of it. I think it raises the care level of it. But in terms of All-Star Game in the NBA, Pro Bowl flag football in the NFL, and the MLB All-Star Game, what is the best current All-Star Game? What's the best current All-Star festivities? Because I think the Derby has a ton of intrigue, but it feels like they can't get the best hitters in the sport to participate. I think NBA All-Star Weekend, outside of the terrible-ass game that they play, I don't think it's bad.
Dunk contest needs some work.
Dunk contest needs some work. They got to incentivize folks to participate. That's my whole thing. I think a guy like Anthony Edwards has the mentality of, like, I'm going to participate in the dunk contest because I don't give a damn. So you hope other people gain that mentality when it comes to All-Star Weekend across respective sports. I think the NHL does a good job, too. I don't give a damn about hockey, but I guess I shouldn't say that. Let's just be real.
That was rude of you to say right in front of me.
I know that, Max. And I was about to say, I know you are our resident Caps insider over here, so excuse me for that.
Your excuse. It's okay. I forgive you.
What do you think? Now that we're on the subject of the Washington Capitals here real quick, we're bouncing all over the place. Active offseason for that group.
Very.
New Nepo GM. What do you think about this group? Is it a group that next year is just going to be on OV goal watch, or will they be competitive?
No, I think they're trying to remain competitive, which I think is really a good sign. They're not just going to roll over and just kind of feed him goals, but I think putting a good lineup around him will help him get goals.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're going to be better next year. I think Brian McClellan has a vision. I think this has all been planned for a little bit. I think he saw the direction the team was heading last year and was like, we gotta turn some things around quick, and he's doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, for sure. They have been super active this offseason. an offseason in which they actually had salary cap space for the first time in
a ton of
while.
It.
And they're using it.
And they might get a little extra more if Kuznetsov ends up going up to Russia, like some of us think he's going to.
Yeah, that was reported earlier today. I saw that. For Evgeny, you just hope that he's got all of his issues off of the ice settled. And because if he figures that out, I mean, it's a guy that's been a 20-goal scorer before
in
his career. He could play, but obviously things not working out here in D.C. for the Washington Capitals. Speaking of the Monumental Sports family, one-third of the Monumental Sports family, the Washington Wizards, they're in action tonight out in Las Vegas in the Summer League. Summer League game number 3 for the Washington Wizards. Pretty big-time matchup here tonight as they take on Donovan Clingan in the Portland Trail Blazers. Clingan obviously was a star for UConn during their back-to-back national championship runs. Tonight, though, I'm going to have my eyes glued on that when I get home and run it back on the rewind just to see Alex Saar go up against the number 7 overall pick from this year's draft and a guy that some folks thought was in contention for that first overall pick in Donovan Clingan. I talked about it a little bit with Danny. Saar has struggled a little bit with the physicality of the NBA Summer League, and I wonder if you're struggling with it in the summer, how will you fare with it during the regular season? Now, there's plenty of time between now and September, October for him to get stronger, continue to add girth, continue to add skill. But early returns says Alex Saar is going to be a power forward, and that's okay. It honestly justifies the Jonas Valanciunas signing even more, though. So we were talking about it earlier with Danny. I think Saar, to me, I'd have him as my starting power forward from day one, and I'd let him get his feet wet and learn on the fly. I think experience is the best teacher. And for the Wizards, you're trying to capture the flag, so to speak. So you have the runway to allow guys just to play. That's why I'm like, man, I might get freaky with the lineups, depending on what it is. I may go Bub Carrington, Jordan Poole backcourt, Bilal Coulibaly at the 3, Saar at the 4, Valanciunas at the 5. That means I'm trading Kyle Kuzma, by the way. And then I've got Kispert off the bench. I've got Malcolm Brogdon off the bench. You instantly start to remember. You're a little thin on the bench. Rashawn Holmes. They got guys. It just becomes about how willing they are to really let the young guys end up playing this year. I want to continue, though, right now to get back to the burgundy and gold. As we mentioned, training camp set to start next week. All of the veterans will have reported to Ashburn. Rookie set to report on Thursday, but it gets real coming up next Wednesday. As we get geared up for training camp, want to continue our position preview series for the Washington Commanders. Very fitting that we're doing receivers and defensive backs today, based on the big news of Brandon Ayuk requesting a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. And as I've said all show long, I don't think a deal happens. But I also acknowledge that that's because Niners have leverage and Ayuk doesn't. If you're Washington, you got to raise and balance this question. How much capital are you willing to give up to bolster your wide receiver room? That's the big time question. But looking at the receiver position outside of Brandon Ayuk, Washington returns Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson. They signed Olamide Zaccheaus this summer. They drafted Luke McCaffrey in round number 3. They've got some guys coming back like Dax Milne and Mitchell Tinsley, Bryson Tremaine, just to name a few here. When I think about what Washington has at receiver, De'Ami Brown, De'Ami Brown. What Washington has at receiver, even without Brandon Ayuk, I don't think it's a bad group. I'm seeing them ranked 26th, 27th in the National Football League. Maybe this is clear homer bias from your boy. I don't believe as if they're that bad at the wide receiver position. I don't. Real quick Wizards note here while we got it. Joshua B. Robbins, good time. Good friend of the show, always a good time to do radio with. I love what the Wizards are doing tonight. They are starting Kyshawn George as shooting guard. I don't know if they did that last game. But Patrick Baldwin going to make his summer league debut and play power forward. Alex Saar starting at the center spot, going head-to-head with Donovan Clingan. Sink or swim, bro. I am so ready and so geeked up. See, that's why it's great to root for a tanking team because it makes your NBA interest 24/7, 365. Like, you're always worried about something. Now we got Summer League to monitor here as well. But, yeah, NBA Summer League coming up momentarily. Wizards playing their third Summer League game coming up here. Tip-off set for 8:30. But want to continue our position preview series. Evaluating the Commanders' receivers and defensive backs, as I mentioned, is fitting that we're doing those position groups today because of the Aiyuk news. But I said it when I was with Danny. I think, let's just go to Pro Football Focus's list. They had Terry McLaurin ranked as the 17th best receiver in the National Football League heading into 2024. And this is despite the quarterback play that he's had to deal with, 18th best receiver, despite the quarterback play that he's had to deal with. The guys in front of him all have had way better quarterback play. DeAndre Hopkins, Devonta Smith, Nico Collins, Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson, you can make an argument, hadn't had it either. So there's that. But that's the Ohio State thing. You get it. Puka Nacua has had good quarterback play. DJ Moore has kind of had inconsistent quarterback play as well. Stephon Diggs has had good quarterback play. Deebo Samuel has had good quarterback play. Cooper Kupp, Aiyuk, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Devontae Adams has become a little bit frustrated here. By the way, he's got to shut the hell up. I don't know if you've watched receiver at all, Max, but he's got to shut up.
I got to watch the rest of it, but I have seen the clips, and he's very mad at Jimmy G. And
should be.
Yeah, right.
He should know. Jimmy G is known for bagging beautiful women and having a perfect jawline.
Yep.
Not being a good quarterback. You should have known that. Anyways, A.J. Brown at 5, Lamb 4, Chase 3, 2 is Hill, and 1 is Justin Jefferson. I list all those guys to say, Terry McLaurin gets mentioned in that category with some of those cats in that, like, tier 2. And when I say tier 2, I'm talking like 7 through 12 in the NFL. But his quarterback situation has not been anywhere near as horrendous as those guys. So my argument is this when it comes to not trading for Aiyuk. Terry McLaurin's had 4 straight 1,000-yard years, and if he would have had 92 more yards as a rookie, would have had 1,000-yard season in every year he's played in the NFL, despite having god-awful quarterback play. Does that mean something? Does that mean anything to you guys? With him finally having a steady Eddie at the position, we hope, in Jayden Daniels, I wonder, does Terry McLaurin prove himself as a bona fide top 10 receiver? I hope he does. It means the team's good. But I don't know. For that reason alone, I'm like, do you need to go get Aiyuk? What if Terry is him? Jahan Dotson. He didn't have good quarterback play in year one, dealing with Carson Wentz. Last year, he wasn't as good as he should have been. Is he a legit number 2 in the league? All of a sudden, when training camp starts and you see them with the quarterback against the real defense, you may, your viewpoint on this receiving core, who I think a lot of folks here locally are not too high on, your view may change on them. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Lister Lounge. You can tweet out at us as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Plenty more to get to here on Overtime. About an hour and a half left to go on the program. Coming up in about 10, 15 minutes or so, we'll be joined by our pal Kevin Sheehan of The Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, the Team 980. We'll have our pal Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network come by and talk all things college football coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll keep you up to speed on Wizards Summer League. So don't go anywhere. Plenty more to go here on Overtime. When we come back, we talked wide receiver. We'll go defensive backs next as our position preview series continues for the Washington Commanders. All that and more next here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. You're tapped in to the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham will take you up to 10 o'clock, quickly sprinting to the end of the show. About an hour and a half left to go, and a lot more to get to. Before we get out of here, about 10 minutes, Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1, over on the Team 980, set to join us. We'll also be joined by Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network as we talk all things college football coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. Wizards Summer League, get ready to tip off. If you just missed it, I said it before the last break, starting lineup for your Washington Wizards. Bub Carrington at shooting guard, Keyshawn George, at your shooting guard, Justin Champagne at the small forward position. Patrick Baldwin Jr., PBJ, making his summer league debut. He's going to start at the power forward spot. And then the matchup of the night, the 7'2 Frenchman, 19 years of age, Alex Saar, the Wizards' number 2 overall pick, getting the start at center, and he's got the biggest matchup of his NBA career to this point. Donovan Clingan in the Portland Trailblazers is Washington's opponent, so he'll get to go head-to-head against the number 7 overall pick. That one set to tip off at about 8:30. We'll keep you up to speed through the night as things continue to progress there. But I want to continue our Washington Commanders position preview series as we get geared up for training camp. Yesterday we did offensive line and defensive line. Tonight, want to look at wide receiver and defensive back. We just looked at the wide receiver position in a little bit of detail on the heels of this Brandon Ayuk stuff. I want to talk about the defensive back room because that outside of offensive line seems to be the big question mark that folks have with this football team. How good can Washington ultimately end up being in the secondary? We don't know. But the big reason I have optimism for that group and why I know they'll be better is because of the guy that's coaching them. Joe Witt Jr. taking over as Washington's defensive coordinator. William Gay, former Pittsburgh Steelers Super Bowl winner, as their assistant defensive backs coach. Dan Quinn now pushing all the buttons defensively. They're just a lot better coached on that side of the football. The personnel hadn't changed much. I'll be honest with you. Personnel hasn't changed a ton, but I think they'll be better at that position. They draft Mikey Sanders still in the second round out of the University of Michigan. A lot of folks think he can come in right away and be one of the best slot corners in the National Football League. You got your incumbent starters on the outside, Emmanuel Forbes, last year's first-round pick, and Benjamin St. Juice. I think there will be competition at the cornerback position for Washington. I think their veteran that they signed, Mike Davis from the L.A. Chargers, is going to be in the mix for that outside corner spot. I wonder whether or not they'll give our guy Christian Holmes a real legit shot to play outside corner. He's someone that I think initially, you know, you thought was just a special teamer, but I'm curious to see how he looks as an outside corner. I look at a guy like James Pierre coming over for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Noah I, former first-round pick of Miami, that spent time in Dallas. He's the guy that I'm really interested in on the outside, simply because of the fact that this is a cat who was a former first-round pick of the Miami Dolphins. So at 5'11", 200 pounds, you know, you hope they can get the most out of him. But that's just the way the cornerback spot looks. To me, I don't know who wins the starting job at outside corner. I look at Benjamin St. Juice, and I think about the way he played in 2022. You got to imagine if they can get him anywhere near close to that form, he is a starting outside corner in this league. The bigger question mark at corner, I think, fair or not, is Emmanuel Forbes. Now, I know it normally takes first-round DBs some time to get going. Didn't for Tariq Woolen. Didn't for Christian Gonzalez. But, hey, we got to, you know, play the company line, right? The one thing and the one reason I have hope for Forbes is, one, the coaching he got last year was piss poor. Brent Wieselmeyer, coaching the DBs after reading defensive backs for dummies, just completely unqualified. So hopefully this group gets the most out of Forbes. What is Dan Quinn's defense is known for? Turning the football over. It is for that reason that I think Emmanuel Forbes has a chance to bounce back. He'll be given the freedom to be a ball hawk. He'll get to play fast and with his eyes. So hopefully that makes them better and it makes him better. Tackling, I worry about with him, though. I don't know about Emmanuel Forbes, man. As we get closer and closer to camp, and I look at Washington's last three first-rounders before JD, it's Jamin Davis, Dotson, and Forbes. I think Forbes is the worst one. And I ain't trying to trash Forbes. It's not what I'm doing at all. He's got a lot to prove for me. Am I counting him out? No. Do I think it's likely that he bounces back and looks like a first-rounder? I think it's more likely than him stinking. I give him a much better shot to bounce back relative to him just completely fizzling out. I don't think that's the case. I think he's got legit talent. The big thing we worried about is the weight. He's got to get better technique. He's got to get better playing within the system. And I think this system is going to be more tailored to his strengths, allowing him to see ball, get ball, point blank. So I got big-time hopes for Emmanuel Forbes Jr. The safety spot when it comes to the secondary, I all of a sudden think is a strength. The two starting safeties that they rolled out with most of the time this offseason has been free agent signing Jeremy Chinn at strong safety and last year's second-round pick Quan Martin at free. And Quan's had a big summer. I'm expecting big things out of him. He played on a damn good Illinois defense a couple of seasons ago. I really do think that Washington at safety is better than they've been in a long, long time in terms of depth. Look at the guys that are going to be in the mix. Jeremy Chinn, Jeremy Reeves, Derek Forrest, Percy Butler, and then my sneaky shooter, Quan Martin, and then my sneaky guy, Dominic Hampton. I think Dominic Hampton coming over from Washington, veteran guy, former captain, I think he is going to have a much bigger role than we're giving him credit for. Whether it's as like a dime linebacker or whether he's playing in the box, I don't think he's a true post safety. I think he's somebody that can do a lot of damage within the box, guarding tight ends and backs. I think he's going to be somebody that Washington can get the most out of. Because that's all I'm looking for. Who can they end up getting the most out of? Jeremy Chinn, I think, though, is going to be one of the X factors on this defense. How they use him. Do they let him play deep half? Do they stick him primarily in the box? Do they use him as a blitzer? A lot to be excited about when it comes to Washington at safety. And then it feels like Derek Forrest is the forgotten man. He was a badass at the height of this defense in 2022. So to assume that he just forgot how to play football also is a bad assumption. I think by season's end, we will realize that the defensive back room honestly is one of the strengths of this football team. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, our first guest set to stop by the program, our pal Kevin Sheehan, joins us next here on The Fan. Still rocking and rolling here on this Tuesday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge Movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock before we dish things over to Bart Winkler in the Infinity Sports Network. Right now, we go out to the BetQL guest hotline where we find one of my absolute favorites talking all things burgundy and gold. It's our pal Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, the Team 980. Kevin, what's going on, my man? I know you're up late watching Summer League basketball.
Yeah, young fella, what's going on? Watching some All-Star game right now.
For sure. How has Paul Skeens looked to start? I guess we'll start there.
He just retired the first batter, and he's facing Gunnar Henderson right now.
Well, isn't that the moment that we've all been talking about and thinking about here locally? Gunnar had an interesting moment I believe it was earlier today doing a Scooby-Doo impersonation. I don't know if you got the chance to check out that video, but the young kid in Baltimore, full of pizzazz and charisma. Big news today, Kevin, that broke right as you were going off of the air. Brandon Ayuk officially requesting a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. Two-parter for you here to start. Your initial thoughts, and then knowing that San Francisco doesn't want to move him, have any idea of what the potential asking price is going to be and whether or not it'll be smart for Washington to go all in on a Brandon Ayuk deal?
Well, I mean, this was sort of coming, you know, all along.
Right.
You know, he was out there basically implying that he wanted to be traded or that he wouldn't mind being traded, and specifically pointed to Washington and specifically used Jaden Daniels in a lot of his, you know, off-season public conversation. Linnell, there's no way the 49ers should trade Brandon Ayuk.
Exactly. Yeah.
They've got a chance to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that a lot of people that don't watch the league but just watch, say, our team, don't realize how good he is and how big he was for them last year in their run to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, if you're a 49ers fan and you got a chance to win the Super Bowl, do you want a second and a fourth?
Right.
You know, for Brandon Ayuk? I mean, I just don't think it'll happen. I think ultimately he'll either play on this fifth-year option year at $14-plus million, or they'll work out a deal with him, because that's in the best interest of the 49ers. It's not in the best interest for the 49ers to trade him, and they don't have a lot of leverage, you know, because – if he decides not to report and there's a real standoff, they didn't have a lot of leverage anyway, because the new team was going to have to pay him.
For sure. The one thing I would say in terms relative to their leverage, Kevin, is the fact that he's playing on the fifth-year option, which is only $14 million, way below market value in terms of what he is. He can lose up to $2 million in fines in camp that they can ultimately decide to waive. But if this thing gets ugly and he decides to hold out into the regular season, I believe he's got up to week 8 and before he loses that year and doesn't get to hit free agency right away. So I don't know. I feel like they do have leverage, Kevin, but it's a situation to me where it's like, how much money is left to go around? You've paid Bosa. You've paid Debo. Purdy is due here soon. You just drafted Ricky Pearsall, who ironically enough today goes on the NFI list right before camp. I agree with what you said, though, for the most part. There's just no way that a team that's on the doorstep of winning the Super Bowl would be comfortable moving on from their number one wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I also am not sure. I think that new collective bargaining agreement means some of those fines are not waivable anymore.
Okay.
And I think it's tougher on players now. You know, they made it much harder in that last CBA to hold out, and part of it was essentially the teams not being able to waive some of those fines for mandatory, you know, practices, training camp, et cetera. But we'll see. Look, from a Washington standpoint, or from a Pittsburgh standpoint, or a team that, you know, could use another playmaker, if you're trying to win and if you're trying to give your young quarterback another weapon to help him in his development, especially a familiar one, you should be interested. Now, Adam Peters knows this guy better than anybody else.
Yeah.
I think his public handling of his contract over the last month and a half, 2 months, I don't think it's been, a redeeming, look for him at all. But the dude can flat out play, and Adam Peters knows him. I don't think you got to give up more than a second and a mid-round pick, conditional, something like that, because you got to pay him so much.
Yeah.
But, anybody looking to get better at that position, he's a top 8, top 9, top 10 receiver, worst case.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And I think, as you mentioned, the casual fan may not understand completely the scenario that the circumstances, rather, that he's been playing under. Since they've acquired McCaffrey, they throw the ball at the 32nd rate in the NFL. He turned, and Kevin, you know numbers as well as anybody. For him to turn 75 catches into 1,400 yards is absolutely absurd. He lines up in the slot. He lines up at X. He lines up at Z. He is invaluable to that offense. I just wonder, why they've had this history and track record of waiting till the 23rd and a half hour to pay their guys. And the way Ryan Clark described it a couple of weeks ago, Ayuk is taking this personal. Why run the risk of taking off the best receiver on your team? Someone that I think, Kevin, is actually irreplaceable in San Francisco because Debo can't do what he does. Juwan Jennings not doing what he does.
I agree with that completely. I think, look, there's some things that Debo does that Brandon Ayuk doesn't do either.
Right.
I mean, he's so versatile as a runner as well. But I think the Justin Jefferson contract probably, you know, put this into the position it's in right now. I mean, at $35 million a year, at $110 million guaranteed, you know, it's essentially nearly $30 million guaranteed more than any other deal that's been done. And it raised, you know, the level of expectations for the people that are coming after, which include CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Ayuk and Ja'Marr Chase somewhere down the road as well. You know, and it also doesn't seem like he'd mind leaving, especially if it were to come here. But if, you know, you got to be careful when you're a player in this position. You know, look at Devontae Adams and what he ended up getting himself into in Vegas. I mean, Derek Carr left. I mean, the situation he's got in San Francisco with, you know, as you said, McCaffrey, especially after McCaffrey arrived, and Debo and Kittle and Johnson, who is as good a blocking receiver as there is in the league. I mean, he's going to continue to thrive. You mentioned 75 catches, 1,350 yards, nearly 18 yards a reception, led the league for all receivers over 70 receptions in yards per catch. And, you know, only the best end up with 70 receptions anyway. This guy turned into an absolute dominant route-running machine this year, and they need him. That's why I think ultimately he'll be back.
Joined right now on the BetQL guest hotline by our pal Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, the Team 980. We mentioned the inflated numbers here based off of last year. Obviously, you put the scheme that he's in the context of his evaluation. Before this year, though, Kevin, he barely has scratched 1,000 yards. He hadn't had health issues. Do you look at the one big year of production and go, are they using that as leverage against him as well?
You saw it coming, though, in 22.
Yes.
You saw it with him. Yeah. You know, people were starting to notice how good he was as a route runner, how open he was, how good he was after the target he was. He was really exceptional in one of those playoff games I'm forgetting right now. I don't think it may have been the Dallas game. Who'd they beat that year? They beat Philly in the when Purdy went down and they were playing McCaffrey at quarterback.
It was Dallas the week before, I believe,
Yeah. But you started to see it, you know, with him. And they know what they have. They're not letting it go, Linnell. Right. I don't see it. But, you know, at the same time, if he really digs his heels in, you know, do you want to sit there without him and you know, and then deal him, you know, at the trade deadline? I think they'd have a lot more leverage then than they would have now.
Yeah, for sure. I continue to maintain that, like, their sweet spot to trade him was at the draft where you could have got immediate return for him. Now the draft picks clearly don't have as much value. We're about a week away, though, Kevin, from training camp getting underway. To keep the conversation on the receivers, if they don't acquire Brandon Ayuk, based on the totality of the offseason, Kev, do you think they've done enough to ensure that JD is going to hit the ground running? Talk about Jaden Daniels.
Well, before we get to that, I have a question for you.
Would
you give up Jahan Dotson and a pick?
To get Ayuk?
Say a second rounder in Dotson?
I would have to say yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Just because, you know, Dotson had it down
Perry straight up?
That's where it gets interesting, Kevin, because the one thing we continue to say about McLaurin, Steady Eddie, Mr. Consistency, he's also had YMCA quarterback play, Kevin. So we don't even really know how good he actually is, four straight 1,000-yard seasons. I don't know in terms of, like, Terry versus Ayuk straight up, but when it comes to Jahan, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think Ayuk would be the best receiver on the team if he were
really?
On the
okay.
team. But I love Terry, and the thing about Terry is you're going to probably have to pay him after next season.
Right.
if Jaden in the offense and he plays well. But anyway, yeah.
That's fascinating.
Camp starts next year. Have they done enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. What more could they have done? They could have, you know, been successful in trading up for a left tackle in the first round. I guess they could have added somebody else up front during free agency. But I kind of like what they have. I think it's going to be really interesting, Linnell,
yeah.
The offensive line from this standpoint. How much of it was the quarterback and the coordinator a year ago? Mm-hmm. We're going to find out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think sticking on the offensive line for a second, you know it from years of watching football. You can put it on paper all you want who you think your projected five is going to be. When them live bullets get cracking and it's one-on-one drills and it's team and you're really seeing who's hitting and who's not, I think center with Biadasz and right guard with Kazmir solidified. I think the other three spots are legitimately up for grabs. I think Stromberg's going to push Allegretti for that left guard spot. I want to see if they actually start Corn Lucas at one of the tackles. So I think that'll be fascinating. But in terms of how we expect them to look offensively, I haven't gotten the chance to really hear your thoughts on this yet. When we see Cliff Kingsbury and Brian Johnson, knowing the RPO background and the spread background of those two, and when you have a former Heisman Trophy winner, number two overall, I think people assume it's 35 to 40 dropbacks a game. I think, Kevin, it's going to be exotic smash-mouth football. They're going to find different ways to scheme up the QB running game, and we're going to see a lot of Brian Robinson and a lot of Austin Eckler. Their chunk plays should come off play action, a lot of the recipe that we thought would be instilled last year.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to see. I mean, I'm really interested. I know that he's incredibly creative. I know that every single person that I know that has – you know, dealt with people that have worked with him say he's incredibly smart. He's incredibly creative. He evolves. He learns. He figures it out. So, you know, in Arizona, they didn't have a massive pass to run ratio. They were in the high 50s to low 40s with Kyler Murray during those first couple of years, the year that they won a bunch of games. And
still rocking and rolling here on this Tuesday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge Movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock before we dish things over to Bart Winkler in the Infinity Sports Network. Right now, we go out to the BetQL guest hotline where we find one of my absolute favorites talking all things burgundy and gold. It's our pal Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, the Team 980. Kevin, what's going on, my man? I know you're up late watching Summer League basketball.
Yeah, young fella, what's going on? Watching some All-Star game right now.
For sure. How has Paul Skeens looked to start? I guess we'll start there.
He just retired the first batter, and he's facing Gunnar Henderson right now.
Well, isn't that the moment that we've all been talking about and thinking about here locally? Gunnar had an interesting moment. I believe it was earlier today doing a Scooby-Doo impersonation. I don't know if you got the chance to check out that video, but the young kid in Baltimore, full of pizzazz and charisma. Big news today, Kevin, that broke right as you were going off of the air. Brandon Ayuk officially requesting a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. Two-parter for you here to start. Your initial thoughts, and then knowing that San Francisco doesn't want to move him, have any idea of what the potential asking price is going to be and whether or not it'll be smart for Washington to go all in on a Brandon Ayuk deal?
Well, I mean, this was sort of coming, you know, all along.
Right.
You know, he was out there basically implying that he wanted to be traded or that he wouldn't mind being traded, and specifically pointed to Washington and specifically used Jaden Daniels in a lot of his, you know, off-season public conversation. Linnell, there's no way the 49ers should trade Brandon Ayuk.
Exactly, yeah.
They've got a chance to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that a lot of people that don't watch the league but just watch, say, our team, don't realize how good he is and how big he was for them last year in their run to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, if you're a 49ers fan and you got a chance to win the Super Bowl, do you want a second and a fourth, you know, for Brandon Ayuk? I mean, I just don't think it'll happen. I think ultimately he'll either play on this fifth-year option year at $14-plus million, or they'll work out a deal with him, because that's in the best interest of the 49ers. It's not in the best interest for the 49ers to trade him, and they don't have a lot of leverage.
No.
You know, because if he decides not to report and there's a real standoff, they didn't have a lot of leverage anyway because the new team was going to have to pay him.
For sure. The one thing I would say in terms relative to their leverage, Kevin, is the fact that he's playing on the fifth-year option, which is only $14 million, way below market value in terms of what he is. He can lose up to $2 million in fines in camp that they can ultimately decide to waive. But if this thing gets ugly and he decides to hold out into the regular season, I believe he's got up to week 8. And before he loses that year and doesn't get to hit free agency right away. So I don't know. I feel like they do have leverage, Kevin, but it's a situation to me where it's like, how much money is left to go around? You've paid Bosa. You've paid Debo. Purdy is due here soon. You just drafted Ricky Pearsall, who ironically enough today goes on the NFI list right before camp. I agree with what you said, though, for the most part. There's just no way that a team that's on the doorstep of winning the Super Bowl would be comfortable moving on from their number one wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I also am not sure. I think that new collective bargaining agreement means some of those fines are not waivable anymore.
Okay.
And I think it's tougher on players now. You know, they made it much harder in that last CBA to hold out, and part of it was essentially the teams not being able to waive some of those fines for mandatory practices, training camp, et cetera. But we'll see. From a Washington standpoint, yeah, or from a Pittsburgh standpoint, or a team that, you know, could use another playmaker, if you're trying to win and if you're trying to give your young quarterback another weapon to help him in his development, especially a familiar one, you should be interested. Now, Adam Peters knows this guy better than anybody else.
Yeah.
I think his public handling of his contract over the last month and a half, 2 months, I don't think it's been, a redeeming look for him at all. But the dude can flat out play, and Adam Peters knows him. I don't think you got to give up more than a second and a mid-round pick, conditional, something like that. Because you got to pay him so much.
Yeah.
But, anybody looking to get better at that position, he's a top 8, top 9, top 10 receiver, worst case.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And I think, as you mentioned, the casual fan may not understand completely the scenario that the circumstances that he's been playing under. Since they've acquired McCaffrey, they throw the ball at the 32nd rate in the NFL. He turned, and Kevin, you know numbers as well as anybody. For him to turn 75 catches into 1,400 yards is absolutely absurd. He lines up in the slot. He lines up at X. He lines up at Z. He is invaluable to that offense. I just wonder why they've had this history and track record of waiting till the 23rd and a half hour to pay their guys. And the way Ryan Clark described it a couple of weeks ago, Ayuk is taking this personal. Why run the risk of ticking off the best receiver on your team? Someone that I think, Kevin, is actually irreplaceable in San Francisco because Debo can't do what he does. Juwan Jennings not doing what he does.
I agree with that completely. I think, look, there's some things that Debo does that Brandon Ayuk doesn't do either.
Right.
I mean, he's so versatile as a runner as well. But I think the Justin Jefferson contract probably, put this into the position it's in right now. I mean, at $35 million a year, at $110 million guaranteed, you know, it's essentially nearly $30 million guaranteed more than any other deal that's been done. And it raised, the level of expectations for the people that are coming after, which include CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Ayuk and Ja'Marr Chase somewhere down the road as well. And it also doesn't seem like he'd mind leaving, especially if it were to come here. but if, you got to be careful when you're a player in this position. You know, look at Davante Adams and what he ended up getting himself into in Vegas. I mean, Derek Carr left. I mean, the situation he's got in San Francisco with, as you said, McCaffrey, especially after McCaffrey arrived, and Debo and Kittle and Johnson, who is as good a blocking receiver as there is in the league. I mean, he's going to continue to thrive. You mentioned 75 catches. 1,350 yards,
absurd,
nearly
Kevin.
18 yards a reception, led the league for all receivers over 70 receptions in yards per catch. And, you know, only the best end up with 70 receptions anyway. This guy turned into an absolute dominant route-running machine this year, and they need him. That's why I think ultimately he'll be back.
Joined right now on the BetQL guest hotline by our pal Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, the Team 980. We mentioned the inflated numbers here based off of last year. Obviously, you put the scheme that he's in the context of his evaluation. Before this year, though, Kevin, he barely has scratched 1,000 yards. He hadn't had health issues. Do you look at the one big year of production and go, ah, are they using that as leverage against him as well?
You saw it coming, though, in 22.
Yes.
You saw it with him. Yeah. You know, people were starting to notice how good he was as a route runner, how open he was, how good he was after the target he was. He was really exceptional in one of those playoff games I'm forgetting right now. I don't think it may have been the Dallas game. Who'd they beat that year? They beat Philly in the when Purdy went down and they were playing McCaffrey at quarterback.
It was Dallas the week before, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, but you started to see it, you know, with him, and they know what they have. They're not letting it go, Linnell. Right. I don't see it, but, you know, at the same time, if he really digs his heels in, you know, do you want to sit there without him? And you know, and then deal him, you know, at the trade deadline. I think they'd have a lot more leverage then than they would have now.
Yeah, for sure. I continue to maintain that, like, their sweet spot to trade him was at the draft, where you could have got immediate return for him. Now the draft picks clearly don't have as much value. We're about a week away, though, Kevin, from training camp getting underway. To keep the conversation on the receivers, if they don't acquire Brandon Ayuk, based on the totality of the offseason, Kev, do you think they've done enough to ensure that JD is going to hit the ground running? Talk about Jaden Daniels.
Well, before we get to that, I have a question for you.
Would
you give up Jahan Dotson and a pick
to get Ayuk?
Say a second rounder in Dotson.
I would have to say yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Just because, you know, Dotson
had
it down
Perry
there.
Straight up.
That's where it gets interesting, Kevin. Because the one thing we continue to say about McLaurin, Steady Eddie, Mr. Consistency, he's also had YMCA quarterback play, Kevin. So we don't even really know how good he actually is. 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons. I don't know in terms of like Terry versus Ayuk straight up. But when it comes to Jahan, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think Ayuk would be the best receiver on the team if he were
really?
On the
okay.
team. But I love Terry, and the thing about Terry is you're going to probably have to pay him after next season.
Right.
If Jaden in the offense and he plays well. But anyway, yeah.
That's fascinating.
Camp starts next year. Have they done enough?
Yeah.
We'll see. What more could they have done? They could have, you know, been successful in trading up for a left tackle in the first round. I guess they could have added somebody else up front during free agency, but I kind of like what they have. I think it's going to be really interesting, Linnell, the offensive line from this standpoint. How much of it was the quarterback and the coordinator a year ago? Mm-hmm. We're going to find out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, sticking on the offensive line for a second, you know it from years of watching football. You can put it on paper all you want who you think your projected five is going to be. When them live bullets get cracking and it's one-on-one drills and it's team and you're really seeing who's hitting and who's not, I think center with Biadasz and right guard with Cosmere are solidified. I think the other three spots are legitimately up for grabs. I think Stromberg's going to push Allegretti for that left guard spot. I want to see if they actually start Corn Lucas at one of the tackles. So I think that'll be fascinating. But in terms of how we expect them to look offensively, I haven't gotten the chance to really hear your thoughts on this yet. When we see Cliff Kingsbury and Brian Johnson, knowing the RPO background and the spread background of those two, and when you have a former Heisman Trophy winner, number two overall, I think people assume it's 35 to 40 dropbacks a game. I think, Kevin, it's going to be exotic smash mouth football. They're going to find different ways to scheme up the QB running game, and we're going to see a lot of Brian Robinson and a lot of Austin Eckler. Their chunk plays should come off play action, a lot of the recipe that we thought would be instilled last year.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to see. I mean, I'm really interested. I know that he's incredibly creative. I know that every single person that I know that has, you know, dealt with people that have worked with him say he's incredibly smart. He's incredibly creative. He evolves. He learns. He figures it out. So, you know, in Arizona, they didn't have a massive pass-to-run ratio. They were in the high 50s to low 40s with Kyler Murray during those first couple of years, the year that they won a bunch of games and went to the postseason and lost to the Rams. They ran the ball a ton. And the quarterback ran a lot as well. Not so much on designed or option runs, but a lot, you know, in the scrambling situation. But I can't wait to see. I think this is a season. Last year, anybody that told you they knew about Sam Howell was lying. Nobody knew.
Call me a liar, Kevin. I'm so young and punch drunk with it, Kev, that like I'm gonna latch on. I'm gonna latch on to whoever the guy is supposed to be. I really feel confident about Jaden Daniels though, man.
I feel totally. Yes. Yeah. I'm just saying that last year, a guy that was a fifth round pick and it started one meaningless game, and we, you know, after a couple of preseason throws against Baltimore, it was like we've got the next Steve Young, a right-handed version. I can't wait for this season, though. I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to see Barry schemes up. I think that it'll be beneficial for Terry and Jahan. Can't wait to see a guy like McCaffrey out there. You know, you mentioned the O-line. It's such a good point because when you have a new coaching regime come in, they're not, you know, they're not beholden to anybody that's been here before.
Right.
If they fall in love with, you know, Mason Brooks, you know, or if they fall in love with Braden Daniels or Trent Scott, those guys are going to play.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to be locked in. This is going to be a competitive camp, I would certainly hope. And I think we're going to see the same thing on defense. I think there will be some surprises get to that final cut down with players that we just assumed would have been part of the rotation.
You mentioned the defense here, and I think that's the key to all of this. I think if they are as good as I think they can be, Kevin, and I think I don't even want to put a number on it, but I would say 9-10 wins, flirting with that. But
well, you just did.
But look, more importantly though, is playing meaningful football at the end of December and early January. I think that should be, you know, realistic goals and expectations for this group. If the quarterback,
you said 9 or 10,
but I mean playing meaningful. That's more important though, Kevin. We can do the old song and dance of 7 and 10, 8 and 9. I'm cool with it. I'm just thirsty for playing
on
football.
You don't want to put a number on it. Well, and you put two numbers on it.
And then I immediately put a number on it.
I hear you, though. look, rooting for this franchise for as long as we all have, over the last 30 years, it's been get me to Thanksgiving and give me a chance at 5 and 6 or 6 and 5 so that the games are at least meaningful when we get to December. And that's what you'd love to have. But this season really is about, even though once the games start, we're all going to be rooting for him to win these games. But the truth about this upcoming season is, did they get it right on Jaden Daniels?
Yeah.
And after 17 games, we got to feel like we saw a guy that is going to be the quarterback here for the next 10 years and that they're going to be able to win with. And if we feel that way, more likely than not, they're a competitive team.
Yeah.
You know, and the defense, I'm with you. I don't know how much it's going to improve, but it certainly couldn't get any worse than it was last year.
Yeah.
But I bet just coaching alone will improve the defense. But this is about number 5 and, you know, whether or not they got it right with him.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick here on the defense before we let you run, Kevin. I got to be out there 2 of the sessions this offseason. Just from a juice standpoint, we did this last year with Bieniemy. People were, you know, drooling over the fact that he was cussing people out. This was different, though. It's former Super Bowl winning cornerback William Gay out there. It's Ken Norton. It's Joe Witt. It's the amount of former players that they have on this staff, I think, is going to allow them to get the most out of the talent. But my big question mark with this group is the same question I had post-trade deadline when they shipped out Montez and Chase. How is this group going to generate a pass rush? Because you can say all you want about the secondary and how many question marks you have about it. If they can't consistently affect the quarterback, they're going to be just as bad as they were last year defensively.
Well, I'm hoping that we see a return to what we saw in 22 with Deron and John.
Yeah, for sure. That starts there.
You know, and hopefully scheme can do that and coaching can do that. You know, I don't know what my expectations are of guys like Armstrong and Fowler Jr. and yeah. Farrell as edge pass rushers. You know you're going to see Luvu as a pass rusher from the linebacker position. You're going to see him active in the box. You know, Wagner is 34, but he didn't play like that last year. I'm with you. How are they going to scheme up pass rush and force quarterbacks to make quick decisions? You know, they open up with Baker Mayfield. They've got Joe Burrow in week three. So we're going to know in two of the first three games whether or not it's good enough because those teams have some weapons and they've got, you know, I wouldn't call Baker Mayfield a top quarterback, but yeah. with Mayfield and Evans and then you get the Burrow Chase, you know, who knows will be who else will be on the
right
for Cincinnati, but we're going to get a pretty good look at it. But yeah, you got to scheme up pass rush, man. Bottom line.
That matters most.
Somebody's going to have to do it off the edge a little bit.
Yeah. Can't just all be from the interior. Real quick promise. Last one. What'd you think of the Wizards Summer League to this point, man? I know that's something you've been watching.
I watched the first game. That was it.
Okay.
You know, I was impressed with Carrington, I guess. Sarr to me looks like as a 19-year-old, he'd much prefer to be, you know, a perimeter big guy offensively. But, you know, they're 19.
Right.
You know, they're 18, 19, whatever they are. And this is a long haul, man. I mean, you won't be able to really know for 3 or 4 years.
For sure. Kevin, appreciate you as always, my friend. We will do it again
all
soon.
Right, Linnell.
That's Kevin Sheehan, one of the absolute best, talking all things burgundy and gold. Make sure you tap into the Kevin Sheehan Show weekdays 10 to 1 over on our sister station, The Team 980. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, start talking a little bit of college football as well as getting you up to speed on the Wizards' third summer league game. All that and more coming up next here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.